When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hi, it's Mo. When I first came up with the idea for Mobituaries in 2018, it was clear that sticking only with dearly departed people would be too easy. The fun part was coming up with concepts, countries, things that had never gotten a send-off. I mean, things rarely get obituaries, right? The idea of a defunct sports team was one of the first non-human entities that sparked my imagination. Back when I was 8, during that brief stretch when I decided I wanted to play soccer, my ever-indulgent parents took me to see the Washington Diplomats soccer team play the New York Cosmos, both teams no longer with us. The only thing I remember from the game is that the great Pelé played for the Cosmos. And Pelé wasn't just a great player. He went by one name, like Cher. I never actually ended up playing soccer. For the podcast, we considered doing an episode on ice hockey's Hartford Whalers, and we still may if some superfans step forward to convince us why we should. And yes, I know the team didn't technically die, it just moved south to become the Carolina Hurricanes, but the logo they had in Hartford was fabulous. Ultimately, my co-author on the Mobituaries book, Jonathan Greenberg, suggested we devote a chapter to a team that lasted less than a year, but packed in more drama than the New York Jets have in their franchise history. Did I get that right? This story includes one of the most celebrated names in baseball history. It also includes one of the biggest names in 20th century dictatorship. It's a whale of a tale. That one's for you, Hartford. I'm Mo Rocca, and this is Mobituaries. This Mobit, death of a sports team. Los Dragones de Ciudad Trujillo, 1937 to 1937. If you don't think of me as a sports guy, I get it. You'll hear the Mobit for my short-lived baseball career at the end of this chapter. I'm not obviously athletic, although I can do a one-handed cartwheel with a glass of water in my free hand without spilling a drop. But I love drama, and sports is guaranteed drama. The sides are always clear. You've got winners, you've got losers, heroes, and villains. I was 11 years old when the Americans, yay, defeated the Soviets, boo, in ice hockey at the Lake Placid Olympics. I've heard that the movie Miracle, which depicts that event, is terrific. I'm sure it is, but I don't need to see it. I can remember the thrill of the Miracle on Ice as it happened. Actually, it was on tape delay, and if you happen to grow up in the Washington, D.C. area, as I did, you may remember that our local news anchor actually announced the final score during a commercial break in the middle of the game. I'm pretty sure she had to go into the witness protection program after that. Even better, I like drama with big personalities. So a story about one of baseball's all-time great pitchers and a bloodthirsty Latin American dictator set in the 1930s on an island nation? I'm in. Leroy Satchel Paige was born on July 7, 1906, one of 11 children born to a poor African-American family in Alabama. He started work at a young age, carrying bags at the Mobile train station for a dime apiece. He realized he could make a lot more money if he strung all the satchels on a pole and carried them in a single trip. That's how he earned his famous nickname. Black players were barred from Major League Baseball starting in 1884, shortly after Toledo's Moses Fleetwood Walker became the first African-American to play pro ball. You'll hear about him later. The ban wouldn't be lifted until 1947, the year Jackie Robinson became a Brooklyn Dodger. So in 1926, at the age of 19, the tall and sinewy Paige tried out for the all-black Chattanooga White Sox, reportedly throwing with such accuracy that he could, from the mound, knock over soda bottles lined up on home plate. Paige became known not just as the hardest thrower around, but also the most creative. He was a showman on the mound with his high leg kicks, and off the mound, he became known for his homespun wit. His later six rules for staying young included avoid fried meats which angry up the blood. Makes sense to me. Over a 40-year career, Satchel Paige would become one of history's most beloved players, one of the few Negro League players known to white fans during baseball's long segregated era. Paige knew how good he was. He would tell his fielders to sit down on the grass behind him while he struck out the opposing team. Joe DiMaggio, who batted against Paige in an exhibition game in 1936, called him the best he'd ever faced. In 1931, he signed with the Pittsburgh Crawfords, one of the greatest Negro League teams ever assembled, arguably one of the greatest baseball teams ever. Paige's teammates eventually included Cool Papa Bell, the fastest man in baseball. Paige once said that Bell could turn off the lights and jump into bed before the room got dark. And the great catcher Josh Gibson, the Black Babe Ruth, who was estimated to have hit more than 800 home runs in his career. The team's owner, Gus Greenlee, was a larger-than-life figure. A machine gunner in the trenches of France during World War I, the 6'2" mixed-race Greenlee came back with shrapnel in his left leg. But that didn't stop him from running bootleg whiskey to speakeasies. His sprawling numbers racket, basically an illegal lottery, earned at its height $25,000 a day. Naturally, he opened his own nightclub and used the profits to buy off police and politicians and provide loans to black people who had been rejected by white-owned banks. With his outsized personality, wealth, and charm, he dominated Pittsburgh politics, music, business, and sports. Greenlee financed the first stadium built exclusively for a black ball club, Greenlee Field, what else would he call it, even installing lights. For 6 years, the Pittsburgh Crawfords dominated the Negro National League. But the end was in sight. The Depression was eroding the Negro League's financial foundation, and state attorneys general were cracking down on numbers running. Greenlee faced a handful of indictments, and he could not be as free with the salaries as he had been. In such a climate, the Craws, with a roster for the ages assembled by raiding other Negro League teams, were themselves raided. The man who stole their talent? Generalissimo Rafael Trujillo, the brutal strongman who had taken control of the Dominican Republic in 1930. If there were a Hall of Fame for bloodthirsty dictators, Trujillo would be voted in unanimously on the first ballot. As a boy, he had collected shiny metal bottle caps to pin on his shirt in imitation of a military leader. He began his rise to power by serving in a street gang and then worked as the paid muscle for the wealthy owners of sugar plantations. After he forced Horacio Vazquez from power, Trujillo, then a general, won the election of 1930 with an impressively high 99.2% of the vote, although the numbers are somewhat less impressive once you learn that all the other candidates withdrew because of death threats from Trujillo's goons. Once in power, he renamed the country's capital city of Santo Domingo Ciudad Trujillo. He renamed the country's tallest mountain Pico Trujillo. He renamed the province of San Cristobal Trujillo Province. He made his three-year-old son Ramfis a colonel. To be clear, a three-year-old in military uniform is kind of cute. On Halloween. Trujillo later did allow an opposition party to organize. Such a policy, he believed, made it much easier to identify and murder his political enemies. The story of how Page came to play for Trujillo is told in Avril Ace Smith's terrific book, The Pitcher and the Dictator. Trujillo himself was not much of a baseball fan, but he knew that the Dominican people loved the game, and he thought a successful team would be good for public relations during the upcoming pseudo-election of 1937. He directed a diminutive dentist named Enrique Ibar to form Los Dragones de Ciudad Trujillo, the Trujillo City Dragons. The goal was to defeat the reigning island champs, Las Estrellas Orientales of San Pedro, the San Pedro Eastern Stars. With Trujillo bankrolling him, Ibar traveled to New Orleans in the winter of 1936, where Page was training. Ibar offered Page a contract of $30,000, a ridiculous sum to a player who was receiving a few hundred a month from Greenlee. Page knew he was underpaid in the Negro Leagues. That bunch would hold on to a dollar bill until old George screamed in pain, he said of the Negro League owners. What's more, he was tired of the segregation he faced when playing in the South, where it could be hard to find a restaurant or hotel or even a gas station that would serve black people. Page took the money with one condition. He insisted on bringing his catcher, Cy Perkins. The two became the toast of Ciudad Trujillo and were soon joined by other Negro League stars. The American players were thrilled with the music, the food, the beer, and what Ace Smith discreetly calls las casas de chicas. Page was not one for monogamy. The story goes that he was once served with divorce papers on the mound at Wrigley Field. Never be unfaithful to a lover, except with your wife, he quipped. Satchel and Cy had the money to enjoy it all, and not a single establishment was closed to them because of the color of their skin. In Trujillo's dictatorship, they had more freedom than they'd had at home in the States. But Page's first outing was rougher than expected. He gave up 6 runs in 5 innings. Soon enough, a pseudonymous newspaper column suggested that stricter off-the-field control of the high-paid players was needed. The late nights and sleepy mornings were catching up with the American stars. At the same time, the two other Dominican clubs, there were just 3 teams on the island, were bringing in their own ringers from stateside. The president of one of those clubs flew to Pittsburgh to court Greenlee's remaining stars. Greenlee, already in a rage over the defection of Page, had the visitors arrested by his friends in the Pittsburgh police force. Alas, unlike Trujillo, he lacked the power to imprison people who hadn't committed any crime, and the Dominicans were released. Back in the DR, Satchel's performance improved, but his team was still struggling. Another article in Trujillo's state-sanctioned newspaper called for a curb on the licentiousness of the American players, whose reckless lifestyle was undermining the team's success. The head of Trujillo's death squads was put in charge of discipline, and armed thugs became constant companions of Satchel and the Americans, shadowing them wherever they went. Bars and nightclubs were off limits. No store owner would sell them whiskey. As for the casas de chicas, no chance. Evenings instead were spent playing long games of cards at the hotel. Even team practices lost their casual, playful air. I started wishing I was home when all those soldiers started following us around everywhere we went, and even stood out in front of our rooms at night, wrote Page in his autobiography. The new regimen of chastity and sobriety may have been less fun, but it worked wonders on the field. By the time the playoffs came around, Page was sporting a 6-1 record. Los Dragones defeated Las Estrellas for the championship 8-6. Page really couldn't afford to let the team down. As he later recalled, he was terrified of failure, thinking the whole time about the line of Trujillo's soldiers arrayed on the edges of the field, knives and guns tucked into their belts, clearly visible. The championship trophy was presented to Trujillo's son, Colonel Rafael L. Trujillo Martinez, now all of 8 years old. This remarkable season, however, rang the death knell for the Dragones.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
The Dominican clubs, for all the excitement of the season, had essentially bankrupted themselves with their spending sprees, and the entire league was disbanded. Satchel and the other American players collected their winnings and moved on. Banned from the Negro Leagues for defecting and unable to play for Major League Baseball, Page and the others had no option but to barnstorm the nation, sporting the pinstripes of Los Dragones, billing themselves as Trujillo's All-Stars, even defeating the National Negro League All-Stars at Yankee Stadium in September 1937. Eventually, the National Negro League rescinded its lifetime bans of Satchel and the other defectors. He continued to pitch, despite age and some injuries. With the death of Major League Baseball Commissioner Kenesaw Landis in 1944, the time was right for integration of the major leagues, and Jackie Robinson broke the color line in 1947. The next year, Page signed with the Cleveland Indians, helping them to win the World Series. They haven't won since. The 42-year-old Page was the oldest rookie in Major League history. He played for 5 years in the majors, was twice named an All-Star, and even made a return appearance, pitching 3 scoreless innings for the 1965 Kansas City A's at age 59. Yes, that's right, at age 59. It's great to watch Satchel Paige in TV appearances from the 1960s and 70s, adored by the panelists on What's My Line, and tossing a ball with host Steve Allen on I've Got a Secret. Dick Cavett invited him on in 1971, shortly after Paige became the first Negro Leaguer to be voted into baseball's Hall of Fame. Paige is funny and gracious, even pretending to be charmed by fellow guest Salvador Dalí, who brought along his pet anteater. When Cavett asks Page how good the players in the Negro Leagues were, he answers, "Back in those days, they had a lot of Satchel Pages. There wasn't just one. I just pitched more than everybody else back then. I'm as old as Methuselah," he says, as if to suggest that his longevity, rather than his great talent, is the main reason he's remembered. In the last of his 6 rules for staying young, he wrote, "Don't look back. Something might be gaining on you." Page had outlasted Greenlee, who died in 1952, and the tyrant Trujillo, who was assassinated in 1961, and the fabulous, if short-lived, teams on which he had starred. The owners, the teams, and the leagues themselves passed on, but Satchel Paige himself seemed to just keep going. And other teams you can't root for anymore. The Philadelphia Svaz, 1917 to 1959. The letters stand for South Philadelphia Hebrew Association. Founded by Eddie the Mogul Gottlieb in 1918, the Svaz dominated basketball back when it was referred to as the Jewish game because it required, in the words of one New York Post writer, an alert, scheming mind and flashy trickiness. The Svaz dominated the American Basketball League in the 1930s and 40s, winning 7 titles in 13 years. Stars included household names such as Harry Litwack, Cy Kaselman, Mo Goldman, Irv Torgoff, Red Wolf, Max Poznak, and perennial MVP candidate Shaiky Gotthoffer. But the demographics of basketball, always an urban game at heart, were already changing. The Great Migration was bringing millions of African Americans to the cities of the North, while Jews were moving their families to the suburbs. Gottlieb sold the Svaz to Red Klotz, a former player who refashioned them the Washington Generals, a traveling opponent for Abe Saperstein's Harlem Globetrotters. For the next 44 years, they served as stooges for the world's most famous exhibition club. Gottlieb, meanwhile, founded the Philadelphia Warriors of the NBA, signed a kid named Wilt Chamberlain, and never looked back. The New Jersey Generals, 1983 to 1985. In 1983, the upstart United States Football League put the formidable National Football League on notice, paying big salaries for high-profile stars including Heisman Trophy winner Herschel Walker and future Hall of Famer Jim Kelly. The next year, a New York real estate baron named Donald J. Trump joined the league, buying the New Jersey Generals for about $9 million. "I could have bought an NFL team," he said to the New York Times' Ira Burkow at the time. "I feel sorry for the poor guy who is going to buy the Dallas Cowboys," he continued. "It's a no-win situation for him, because if he wins, well, so what? They've won through the years, and if he loses, which seems likely because they're having troubles, he'll be known to the world as a loser." Within 2 years, the USFL collapsed, and Trump ended up $22 million in the red. The Cowboys are currently worth $5 billion. The Washington Senators, 1891 to 1971. The Washington Senators baseball team died 3 times. The first Washington Senators played from 1891 to 1899. We know little about them except that they were awful. In 1900, the team folded. But when the American League was founded in 1901, the Senators were reborn. They were awful too, losing so much that in 1904, sports writer Charles Dryden quipped, "Washington, first in war, first in peace, and last in the American League." On the bright side, their historic ineptitude inspired the musical Damn Yankees, in which a Senators fan sells his soul to the devil in exchange for a World Series victory. That's the show where Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon met. Now that's a team. In the 1950s, as franchises began moving westward, owner Calvin Griffith vowed the team would remain in Washington forever. He decamped with the team for Minnesota 2 years later. Senators 3.0, hastily assembled at the behest of President Eisenhower, lasted only a decade. Their last game was a riot. On September 30, 1971, the Senators were leading in the top of the ninth when irate fans stormed the field and stole home. They also stole first, second, and third, grabbed handfuls of the infield grass, and ran off with the bat boys' chairs. When the umpires couldn't clear the field, the game was ruled a forfeit. Maurice Rocca's Little League career, 1979 to 1979. as reported by my older brother, Lawrence Rocca. I don't remember if the opponent was Blessed Sacrament or St. Camillus or Our Lady of Lourdes. What matters is that the 1979 Little Flower Midget B baseball team was being humiliated once again, this time in its final game, another blowout in a last place and soon to be mercifully completed Catholic Youth Organization season. The culprit this time was the hulking fourth grader batting cleanup for the other team. He'd already crushed two titanic homers before coming to bat with the bases loaded in the top of the seventh. Sitting on the hill with the rest of the tiny crowd at Bethesda, Maryland's Westmoreland Park, my parents and I leaned forward in nervous anticipation. The infielders retreated to the edge of the outfield grass in panicked self-defense. Maurice, who was usually on the bench, betrayed no feelings in center field, where he was safe at least from decapitation. A head taller than the rest of the players, Slugger swung violently, sending a towering fly to left, eliciting oohs and ahs before it hooked and landed harmlessly foul, just beyond the left fielder's stumbling, tumbling reach. Again and again this happened, the oohs and ahs turning to laughs, a fourth time, then a fifth. Another soaring fly ball, another round of expectant laughter building toward crescendo, suddenly stifled by a blur, a near collision, and the longest split second of silence in CYO history. It was Maurice, running full speed from center past left. At the last possible instant, he thrust his gloved left hand to the absolute limit of his reach, his body at a perfect 45-degree angle to the ground, just the tippy toes of his right foot touching like mercury with a Paul Blair autographed Wilson. The ball stuck to his palm like Velcro as his momentum nearly sent him into a cartwheel, and it stayed in his glove as the crowd erupted in wild cheers and the entire last place 1979 Little Flower Midget B baseball team ran out and mobbed him on the spot. It took 3 minutes for the umpire to restore order and send everyone back to their positions. My brother was not a great baseball player, nor a particularly enthusiastic one. He knew early on that his first season of CYO baseball would be his last. But what he lacked in love and skill for the game, he made up in fidelity to two foundational rules: always hustle and always back up your teammates. As far as improbable defensive heroics go, you can have the big money stakes of Derek Jeter's playoff flip, or the perfect cinematography of Lupus's Bad News Bears miracle. I'll take the one that jumped right off the pages of Joseph Campbell that day at Westmoreland Park. I hope you enjoyed this Mobituary. Be sure to check out Mobituary's Great Lives Worth Reliving, the New York Times best-selling book, now available in paperback and audiobook. It includes plenty of stories not in the podcast. Special thanks to Jonathan Greenberg and Jonathan Karp, Richard Rohrer, and Chris Lynch at Simon & Schuster. You can listen to our final episode of the season in the new year.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.